Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and this is On Point. George McCallman is an artist, graphic designer, and creative director based in San Francisco. He's the author, illustrator, and designer of a new book, Illustrated Black History, Honoring the Iconic and the Unseen, which is out now. George McCallman, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much.
So tell us, what is this book? What are you conveying in this book?
This book was created in a vacuum. I started a project originally 6 years ago where I was illustrating and painting Black history pioneers on a daily basis. And once I was in the process, several friends suggested that I should make this a book, and I assumed that it already was. And once I finished the project and looked around, started doing my research, realized that there was nothing there aside from children's books and academic and historical books. So I was really shocked and decided that I would make it my purpose to make this book.
And what is it in this book? What was it that you were searching for and did not find that you put in this book?
Well, basically an accessible packaging of Black Americans' contributions to American culture. It was just kind of a basic thing, and the absence of it just became a ringing sound in my ears where I felt that I needed to attend to this.
Yeah. And you started out as a portrait a day for 29 days in February. It was 29 because it was a leap year. But now there are 145 portraits included in this book. Talk a little bit about that process and how it grew and why.
It was a really difficult process overall. The making of the art of this book was just pure magic the entire time. It was a very, I've called it in my internal life, a very spiritual experience of communing with these pioneers, most of whom have passed, but there are several that are with us now. And I'm also the writer of the book and the designer of the book, so it was a really all-consuming process. And the art basically took me through the entire thing. I made the entire book in 4 years, and it just became this this mission. It was dogged. I just did not let it go. It was my full-time job the entire time. And communing, making the art, sitting with the subjects, getting to know their accomplishments, their hardships, their challenges, their essences, that carried me through this entire experience.
And before we talk about some of what is in this book, tell us a little bit more about you. What drew you to want to do this type of work?
Well, I didn't see it that way initially, but I am uniquely qualified to make something like this in that I have, 25, 26 years of publishing experience. I started out as a magazine designer. I live in San Francisco now, but I grew up in New York. And so being at the epicenter of publishing in the 90s, I learned from the best, still the best in the industry, how to tell stories. And so I grew into my my writership. You know, I was tentative about writing this book initially, and I found my way into that process. But I know very intimately the back end, the production, the very kind of unsexy parts of publishing. And so I was able to put this together in a very confident way because I knew I had the background experience to make sure that all of the pieces were attended to.
And our listeners can see a selection of some of George's artwork from the book on our website, onpointradio.org. And one example of that, of the many people in the book who you talk about in terms of aspects of Black heroes' lives that we don't always acknowledge, is James Baldwin. For example, you focus on his experience as a Black gay man. Let's hear this clip now from 1985, when he was interviewed by Ken Burns about the Statue of Liberty.
Liberty is the individual passion or will to be free. But this passion, this will, is always contradicted by the necessities of the state. Everywhere. Well, as long as we've heard of mankind, as long as we've heard of states. I don't know if it'll be like that forever. It, for a Black American, for a Black inhabitant of this country, the Statue of Liberty is simply a very bitter joke. Meaning nothing to us.
George, what is it that you want to convey with the portrait of James Baldwin that is in the book?
So many things. The portrait of James Baldwin, like a few of the subjects in the book, a few of the pioneers, I gave two portraits to. There are 145 portraits in the book, 145 subjects in the book, but there are close to 300 portraits in this book. And with James Baldwin, I have what's called a diptych. There are two portraits of him at two different periods of his life. And I showed him as a younger man, and I showed him a little bit older. And what I wanted to show was his complexity and the fact that Baldwin is lauded as one of our greatest American writers. But one of the theories that I have had is part of the reason that he has been so adept at speaking to the American experience is because he was gay. And that is rarely discussed as one of his superpowers. And I actually think that it is one of his superpowers. He was able to sit in the complexity of what it meant to be Black, of what it meant to be gay, and basically shunned by both communities. And he, in his writing, showed a deep love and reverence for all of what it makes us as Americans. And I wanted to really reveal that this man had so many different personalities and so many different personas. He was funny and he was gregarious, but he had one of the most lucid perspectives on what it means to be a Black American in this country.
And from the title of your book, you talk about the iconic and the unseen. Tell us how you chose the subjects of this book, and are these people that you'd normally see in portraiture?
As I was making my list initially, I had close to 500 names, and it was overwhelming at first to think about how I was going to pare it down. And my publisher basically said, "You decide. This is your book. You should decide on that." And it was a very difficult process at first, but it became easier because it was a really organic, emotional process. I kept looking at the people whose stories I was drawn to, whether they were well-known or whether the audience would be learning about them for the first time. There was something in their telling, in their hardships, in their joys and pains, their accomplishments, that I wanted to reveal, I wanted to dig into. And so it became just a very emotional and intuitive process. You know, this book reveals some of my own internal biases. This book has more women than men. There are quite a few more artists than another person would have selected. But what I wanted to say, it was part of my personal philosophy in the making of this book, that artists play a really important role in defining culture wherever they are. And in American culture in particular, Black Americans have contributed a disproportionate amount of what defines American culture. And so I wanted to show that my awareness of that also, the range of vocations and backgrounds in this book is astonishing. It is in every possible field. But it just became, I kept coming back to, what is it about this person that I want other people to know about?
And talk about portraiture as a medium and the importance of Black people in portraiture, in art.
That is a really beautiful question because I thought about it. I thought about it every day in the making of this book. This book is notable for a few different reasons. But one of the most interesting things about this is that every portrait in the book is rendered in a completely different style. And this book might look, if you didn't know it, it might look like there are 17 different artists who have made this. And in doing that, I was assigning an individuality to each person. I was saying that basically no two accomplishments are alike, and that I was trying to render the emotional aspect of the subject on the page. I want you to feel something as you're looking at them. And Black portraiture in Black art is a really huge form of that. We are always telling our stories, and we're always telling each other's stories. And portraiture and the eyes and expression and personality are really, really important in Black art to assigning and defining our perspective on the world.
And George McCalman is an artist and author of Illustrated Black History. Stay with us, and you can see a selection of George's artwork from the book on our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. Today, I'm speaking with the artist and designer George McCalman, whose book, Illustrated Black History, Honoring the Iconic and the Unseen, is out now. I'll ask George to stand by because I want to bring in another voice now to spend a few minutes talking about the role that Black portraiture plays and how important it is to telling our nation's story. Liz Andrews is executive director of the Spelman College Museum of Fine Art in Atlanta and co-curator of the exhibition Black American Portraits, which ran at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art this summer and will begin a national tour in February. She's also the co-editor of an accompanying book, also entitled Black American Portraits, which launches in February alongside the tour. Liz, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about when Black Americans started painting other Black Americans. That wasn't something that always happened.
That's right. I would say if you look at early American portraiture, we were primarily having artists from Europe coming over to paint prominent citizens, the founders, and it's very rare to see portraits of Black people because, of course, in the early days of the Republic, Black people were not considered people. So being a subject of a portrait was somewhat absurd. But I would say more than painting, actually photography was the turning point for Black Americans and rendering images of ourselves, because the invention of photography and the commercialization of it in the United States coincided with emancipation. So it just so happened at this moment in time when you have this newly freed population of Black people who for the first time are participating in the economy in a way other than themselves being a commodity. It's all happening at the same time as photography is exploding onto the scene in the United States. And so photography studios started popping up around the country, and Civil War soldiers, people with some means, would go to these studios and bring their cherished possessions dressed to the nines. You know, they had books to convey knowledge or flags to convey patriotism. And making these images was not just a keepsake for themselves, but really a counter image compared to the mainstream depictions of Black people, which, of course, up until then had been really to justify slavery. You know, Black people as loud, lazy, ugly. And so I think when we think about the history of portraiture in Black Americans, photography is such an important moment.
And talk about how photography evolved into portraiture.
Yeah. So photography in its first decades really took off in the United States more than anywhere. And portraits were the thing that really fascinated people. I think because portraiture is a tool of power. It's something that monarchs and wealthy people for centuries have used to convey an image for all of history. You know, you may have severely distorted features or skin, but in your portrait, you can convey yourself as beautiful, you can convey yourself as powerful, and that is the image that will stick in people's minds. Mm-hmm. And in fact, at the beginning of the nation, portraits, for instance, of George Washington and the founders were arguably just as important, if not more important, to envisioning the United States as a nation than even the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, because it set in people's minds this idea of the embodiment of this nation, of this liberty that James Baldwin, you know, so aptly said has always been a contradiction for Black Americans.
Yeah, and you talk about portraiture as a tool of power. Because of that, it's often seen as a very elite medium. Can you talk about, is there a tension between that kind of elitism that's seen in the portraits of leaders, which includes even the Obamas, versus the portraiture that is meant to capture the experience of Black people more broadly?
Yes and no, because I think that there's something innately human about wanting to present an image of yourself, of your own making. And portraiture has most definitely been used to convey messages of power, to prop up leaders and powerful people. But I think that Black artists have, for generations, used the power of portraiture to present a counter-narrative, to say, we refuse to be depicted in this dominant lens that demeans us. And so we're seizing the power of this medium through photography, through sculpture, through painting, to say, this is how we see ourselves, and we want you to see us this way.
Liz Andrews is Executive Director of the Spelman College Museum of Fine Art in Atlanta and co-curator of the exhibition Black American Portraits, which begins a national tour in February. Liz, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
George McCalman is an artist and author of Illustrated Black History, honoring the iconic and the unseen. George, just listening to Liz talk about portraiture as a tool of power, talk about that.
You know, I was listening, just nodding my head the entire time that that Liz was so eloquently giving the context and the history. The one thing I want to add is that illustration and art and portraiture also conveys immortality. It is timeless. And that is one of the reasons that it has been an elite practice. It, when someone captures your essence in that way, it is forever. And us as a community taking back the narrative of the stories of how we see ourselves and how others see us, it is a powerful tool to access that, to be able to create a countermeasure and a counterbalance to how we have been depicted over the expanse of this country's history.
And I want to ask a question that I asked of Liz to you. Do you see a tension between the type of portraiture, such as those of the Obamas, which are on tour and which here in Washington, D.C., caused long lines at the Smithsonian when they were there, and other forms of portraiture that you can see in other places, including in street art, that are meant to convey the lived experience of Black Americans?
Yes, I do. I mean, we all love the portraiture, Kehinde Wele and Amy Sherald, that those artists did of the Obamas. But I remember, and everyone remembers, that those selections and those portraits were radical at the time because they moved away from the Eurocentric rendering of American presidents and first ladies. And what the Obamas did, which is what art does, is that it was provocative. It provokes. It got us thinking differently about how our icons and the people that we deify in our everyday life are portrayed. And I think that is the power. We rarely talk about the cultural aspect of art because it tends to be politicized. But the truth is, as human beings, we are creatures of our cultures. And so we don't all have the same perspective. And art provides a window into how the perspective of culture, how we as Black people see ourselves.
And did you see this when you embarked upon, when you became an artist, first of all, and then also as you embarked upon this project that became this book of over 300 portraits of 145 people? Were you thinking about the power of the portrait in that way, or was this something that was more organic and you that hit you along the way?
Well, to give a complex answer, it was both, because I was thinking about it as a graphic designer and art director that I am. As the designer of the book, I was thinking about the framework of how the art was sitting in. But I was also the artist, and as an artist, you can't overthink or intellectualize or be too academic about how you're thinking about the process, because then you will be outside of it and you won't be, it won't be honest anymore. And so I had to kind of render these twin poles of thinking about what I was doing, but also really inhabiting the process so that I could be honest with myself about what it is I was trying to do with each portrait.
And how did you measure that honesty?
Well, I'm fortunate that in San Francisco, I'm surrounded by a really incredible creative community. And my studio mate was someone who saw there were very few people who saw the entire thing as I was making it. and my studio mate, Georgia, who is a rigorous artist in her own practice. She really gave me the feedback and the context. She reflected what she was seeing, and I was really grateful to have someone who also was thinking about the cultural aspect of what I was doing, giving that. She basically acknowledged a lot of what I was thinking internally and gave me a second set of eyes across all the layers that I was thinking about as I was putting this book together.
And that makes me think of another point, is that artists in Black portraiture and elsewhere need to be a part of a community, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was, making this book was a community effort. There's no way I could have done it on my own. I had what I call a Black board of directors. As I was putting this together, every time there was an issue that I was having within myself in the making of this, I had people that I could speak to who could reflect their perspective. I wanted to make sure that even the lens through which I was putting this book together was culturally Black. All the typography in the book is made and rendered by Black typographers. I wanted to make sure the cells of this book came with that perspective. And we tend not to think about these things when we get our books, when we consume our culture. But as someone who's been doing this for a while, I wanted to make sure that everything, that the underlayer and the top coat, had this cultural Black perspective.
George, there are some names in the book that we don't always come across in the histories of Americans or even the history of Black Americans. One is Mary Frances Hill Coley. She was a midwife in Georgia. In 1952, the Georgia Department of Health made a documentary about her work called All My Babies.
Well, how far are you along with this pregnancy, honey?
About 6 or 7 months, I think.
What did the doctor say about your case, honey?
She ain't seen no doctor.
Well, just tell me, honey, how did you get along with all your pregnancies?
Our first one come dead. The next one dropped before she got far along with it.
Well, you just got to see a doctor. Maybelle, I'll tell you what to do. Come on down to the clinic Friday morning, yeah?
George, why did you choose Mary Frances Hill Coley to include in this book?
Well, I, these are the internal conversations that I have with my community and that we as a Black community have. What I wanted to render is a view that's just not talked about. Basically how Black women have raised this country. And I wanted to show that the women who raised white children were as important to the strata of this country as all of the kind of academic and business pursuits that we tend to laud. We tend to not focus on the doulas, the nurses, the caretakers, the child rearers. I wanted to show that they were as important to defining the success of this country as so many of the other celebrities and sports figures that we tend to value.
And using art to do that is quite a medium, even considering that figures like this are not even in, as we said, history books. So Why is it important to portray them in portraiture, in art?
Because I was placing them alongside the people that we in American culture tend to value. I wanted to place Mary Frances alongside Colin Kaepernick. I wanted to place her alongside Ida B. Wells. I wanted to place her alongside James Baldwin, because to me, she is as important as those figures also.
And tell us some of what you learned as part of making these portraits of these people. What was it telling you about Black life today?
Well, it you know, this was the subhead of this book can be the re-education of George McCallum too, because this is a subject that I have been immersed in for the last 6 years in a really concentrated way. I am not a historian, and I never represent myself as that in any telling of this book. But I learned a lot that I would not have known otherwise if I had not committed myself to this book. And so it has given me a fresh perspective and appreciation for the contributions that Black Americans have given America.
George McCallum, there's still much more to talk about this book and your work. Stay with us. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and I'm continuing my conversation with the artist, designer, and author, George McCallum. His new book, Illustrated Black History, Honoring the Iconic and the Unseen, is out now, and you can see a selection of George's work on our website, onpointradio.org. And George, one of my favorite examples of your work in the book that is also featured on our website, it is personal to me as someone who only recently discovered that my great-great-great-grandfather, who was born into enslavement, fought for the Union in the Civil War. His regiment was based out of Kentucky, but you include a portrait Amazing. Of the 54th Massachusetts Regiment. Tell us about that.
The 54th was one of the very first names that I added to the document that I was building in the initial stages as I was deciding which of the pioneers I wanted to include in this book specifically. And what I wanted to represent is, you know, there were many different points in history that I could have focused on the military, but what I wanted to focus on was the original, you know, the just thematically focusing on the Civil War would allow me to dedicate how tireless Black Americans have fought for the freedoms in this country, and I really wanted to show in it, and as you can see, it takes up the entire spread that it is on. I really wanted to dedicate and show that it wasn't just a few, that there was volume, that there were so many Black Americans who have fought and died for the values that we take for granted in this country. And I really wanted to shine a spotlight on that.
George, as an artist, is it more difficult to deal with some of the most harrowing parts of our nation's history, such as the Civil War, as a subject? Is that harder to do even in portraiture?
That's a really thoughtful question. You know, with all of these portraits, I basically had to sit with the complexity and the part of history that each person embodied. They were all individuals, but they were also avatars of a story, of a larger narrative that I was telling of 400 years of American history. It's ambitious of me to say this, but I wanted the casual viewer, as they were reading this book, to have a sense of the lattice, the interconnectedness, that I am telling a story of 400 years of a country through the eyes of a particular group of people that have been largely and still are ignored, that their contributions are not as valued as other parts of this country. And in basically showing and sharing this, I wanted to show that this country has really uncomfortable truths about its origin. And we are still in a very national and public conversation about how to reconcile that. And I saw this book was a really healing thing for me as someone who has had had a sense of American history. But as I started researching this book, I realized I just didn't know enough. And I was really, I really valued that I had to sit with the uncomfortable parts within myself of what my perception of American history was and was not.
Mm. So one of the more modern figures you include in this book is Dr. Ben Carson. He was a pioneering pediatric brain surgeon before seeking to become the Republican nominee for president in 2016 and being appointed Secretary of Housing and Urban Development by President Trump in 2017.
When you look at what the Black community has been through, go all the way back to slavery. It was the family, the strong family units, and the faith in God that got people through that. That got people through Jim Crow, through severe segregation, through all the difficulties. But what really had a negative impact was when the government came along and said, "There, there, you poor little thing. I'm going to take care of all your needs," and started implementing policies that were destructive to family formation. Those are the things that have hurt the Black community the most.
George, what does Dr. Carson represent to you, and why did you include him among your portraits?
Mm-hmm. So Ben Carson is a very controversial figure in general. He's become that. And I had him, I included him deliberately in this book, knowing that it was going to be controversial to do so, because what he represented to me was an aspect of Black accomplishments that is basically when our heroes fail us, and when our history, when our avatars, when our representatives become something else. When I was growing up, Ben Carson was a superhero. And he was one of the people that in the 80s, you know, there were so few of us that were lauded to that level, that he was seen as a representative of everything that was good about us. And his coming out as a Republican several years ago and his trajectory the last few years has really diminished his accomplishments. But what I wanted to show is the complexity, that it is really difficult. You know, he is as much a figure like R. Kelly, Bill Cosby, our titans who turned out to be something else. And I wanted to represent that in this book also, that you can't argue with his accomplishments, but culturally, you absolutely can. And so, you know, who he represented to us within ourselves was something that I wanted to show also.
You know, in this book, it doesn't just represent individuals in the portraiture, but also movements. Talk about the inclusion of Black Lives Matter.
Well, I live in a part of the world where a lot of American movements, a lot of progressive American movements start. And so, you know, honoring the women who created Black Lives Matter was a no-brainer for me. I know the power locally of what they have created, but I also wanted to show globally what they have created in the last couple of years, especially around the epicenter of the murder of George Floyd. The rallying call of Black Lives Matter took hold and spread across the country and across the planet. And, you know, to know that these Oakland women, you know, created a rallying cry for what is still a basic and fundamental ask. It's a really simple thing, but that it is still resonating with so many people and has created a movement that has just spread, that is in the fabric of everyday life now, is astonishing. And I just wanted to give them, to show how much their stewardship has created.
Do you have a favorite? I know that's an unfair question, but among these portraits, do you have a favorite?
I really don't. Because I'm too close to this, and I put the same amount of energy into every single portrait. Whether it seems like it was a simple line or complex layers of paint, I really communed with each person. It was a very spiritual experience for me. So I'm a little too close to everything. I have stories about every single portrait that I can tell, some of which really kind of defy just kind of regular conversation, because I felt oftentimes that the pioneer was with me, was staring at me, was asking me to render them in a specific way. I really wanted to tell the emotional truth of the person that I was communing with.
Mm. So you spoke a little earlier about the intentionality of everything within the book, right down to the fonts. You know, mm-hmm. It went well beyond just mm-hmm. the portraits themselves. Why was that so important to you, to focus so much on every aspect of the design of the book? And is that normal? Is that normally what happens when you have a book of art like this one?
It's completely not normal. the entire making of this project was atypical. The book was published by HarperCollins, and several times in the process I asked the people on the inside if they had ever worked with someone who did all of the things in one project that I do, and I kept hearing, no, you are the first person to do all of these things in one sitting. And for me, it was a non-negotiable to design the book. I spoke to several publishers initially that insisted that I not design it, in which case that was a reason for me to stop the conversation with them. I wanted to render, the reason it was so important to me was what was a callback to an earlier part of our conversation. I wanted to represent the cultural aspect of the title of this book. It didn't make sense for me, for someone who was not Black, to design this book. And if I hadn't designed it, someone not Black would have designed this book. And I wanted to really make sure that the entire packaging of this was representative of what people could see on the cover, that every single page has been lovingly placed with the context of honoring the contributions, of really showing and treating each person as the titan that they are.
And is that one reason you describe yourself as a pioneer? What do you mean by that? Is it that sort of intentionality at every level, or what do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know that I wouldn't say that I am a pioneer, but I do think that this book is pioneering. It basically brings into play the cultural aspect. I run a design studio, and I design other people's books, and I have been designing books for a long time. But what I call this book and what I call the books that I design, I call them cultural artifacts. They're not just books. They're telling stories that are not usually. We can't be so casual about it that this is just another book. This is a book that did not exist before I made it. And so it is pioneering in its own way. the perspective, the way it's designed, the way that it is presented, that a Black person wrote, illustrated, and designed the book is radical in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. And so if this is pioneering, what would you like to see come forth after this in your own work as well as in the work of other artists? You say you started this because you were looking for something that you could not find. What is there still that needs to be discovered or that you would like to be discovered as a continuation of this work?
Well, I don't want this book to be the only one of its kind. I hope that this is the start of many other books championing the pioneers of American culture through different perspectives. There is so much room. This is still so much uncharted territory. The other reason that I wanted to do this book is that I have seen every February the commodification of Black History Month. And it's usually the same 5 to 10 people that in the form of quotes, in the form of uplifting quotes, that doesn't really show the under layer of their accomplishments or the impact of their accomplishments. And what I wanted to show is that there is an ocean, an absolute ocean underneath that iceberg that you can see on the surface, that there are so many stories that impact and people who impact the layering, the strata of our everyday existence that everyone should know about. I want this book to be in every home in America because I feel like it is absolutely necessary for more people to know about this. Everyone should know about this.
And on that aspect that everyone should know, George, you talked about the importance of this cultural artifact that you created to have been the work of a Black artist and the entire creation to be done by Black artists. What do you say to artists who are not Black, artists who are not a part of any marginalized community in this country, who want to, in their art, paint a more complete, broader picture in their work of what America is, all aspects of it?
I say go for it. I say that would be amazing. I think more of that needs to happen too. And you know, this is a country of extremes. It moves from one extreme aspect to another. You know, that I have this opportunity, that I gave myself this opportunity to do this. The truth is that a few years ago, this project would not have happened. I think that's why it hasn't happened. I know I'm not the first person to think of this, but I've been the first person to do it because I have an unfair advantage in that I have been in publishing for a long time. So I know the back end process of making a book like the back of my hand. And so there was no one that needed to translate anything for me. And that was my superpower, is that I knew the whole process. For someone who was doing a book for the first time, it is intimidating. It's not intimidating for me.
All right. George's book, Illustrated Black History, Honoring the Iconic and the Unseen, is out now. You can see a selection of George's artwork from the book on our website, onpointradio.org. George McCowman, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.